and this is so important, when we went through those numbers, South Africans are inherently negatively perceptive of anything that has to do with South Africa, even when the data is telling you that it's actually positive.
South Africans are negatively perceptive of their own country.
100%.
South Africans are negative.
So here's something interesting.
Tell us.
Got a banging show ahead. Welcome to it. It's called The Shady Podcast. My name is Shady. That guy's podcast somewhere over there. Why are you, brother?
I'm well, brother.
Shady and podcast.
I'm podcast with a PH.
Yeah, with a PH.
And in the interest of tribalism, PH chose the guest.
Yes. Yes. What's going on? We have ourselves. We have ourselves an amazing guest today. He's in fact, you know, I never want to speak for the guest.
I am an entrepreneur, a socioeconomic commentator, and I'm a skills advocate, and I'm also a nerdy creator.
You okay? Yeah. Skills advocate, nerdy creator. Mm.
And of course, he has a name.
I think when I knew you, you were Y academic. When I first met you,
I actually, funny enough, was never part of the Y Academy. A lot of people thought that I came through the Academy.
I thought that too.
I came off the street, bro. I came off the street.
What did you do there? Because I met this guy at Y Academy. At the time, I think I was on drive or whatever. Yeah, it was like 2011.
2011, 12.
Dog. Yeah, in 2011, 12. Mm. Yeah, now, why I was saying a Y Academic is because there were like maybe three people that made it from Y Academy.
Yeah.
And that are still in the game. So Openduga was in Y Academy, folks. Like that you still know of and that I still know.
Yeah.
So I thought you were a Y Academic and you came off the street.
I came off the street, my boy. It was, I remember Utumelo.
Mm.
So Zama Dube was like, hey, you should pull through. I'm looking for a new producer, blah, blah, that type of stuff.
Yes.
And then Dumelo, I had an interview with Dumelo and we just sat and we chopped it up for maybe like an hour. It ended up being an hour and a half and he was like, yo. And we were just chatting, literally. And he was like, okay, you know a lot. So I think you'd be great for the thing and you know how to express yourself. So that's kind of where the whole thing starts. Yeah.
You, I don't want to give the, was it Factory? You started that agency, ne?
Like, yeah, Plum Factory. Plum Factory.
That's what I was trying to think. Plum Factory. Okay,
so it was one of the first, to my knowledge, black-owned sort of like Twitter digital agencies.
Not like an
actual agency, right? Because a lot of agencies at that time were 2013 into 14, were changing and realizing that social media and digital could be a thing.
Yes.
Right. So we started an exclusively black-owned digital and social media agency.
Yes. And look, you guys were the plug.
Talk your shit, big dog.
Yeah, we made bank.
Talk your shit, big dog.
I had more money back then.
No, it was a heavy, that one.
Because we caught up, we went for a meeting, remember? Yeah, you and Dumi.
And Dumi, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And he pulled up, and I was like, yeah, who's him? No. Yeah. And Dumi was like, how
you're
dying?
No, I was whipping.
The coins are in.
At that time, I was whipping. Mm. And there was also like some rumblings. They were like, he's getting government money. I said, no.
He was moving nice. He was cruising nice.
Remember that scandal with the ANC signboards?
Hectic. Why are you going there?
We were never part of that.
No. He pulled up in a serious SUV. I knew he'd made it. He had like a seat cover with beads.
That's peak Eastern Cape showing wealth.
Shout out. I won't lie. But I only feel like I've made in the Eastern Cape when you've got a double cab. You've got to have a double cab. Yeah. You got to have I'm telling you, it's the craziest thing. Like, a lot of the tier two provinces in South Africa, you don't really need to do much.
Sure.
And you don't really need to spend a lot in order for you to be comfortable and to be okay amongst the people that you're with.
Sure. Mm.
That's why you've got such a huge culture in, KZN, right, of guys driving double cabs.
That's enough for those guys.
And if you get a double cab, you don't feel out of place.
Gotcha.
And it's also not that, pricey where it's, into the millions where it's, this is a 2 mil car. No, you can get one for like a mil and be chilled, and you'll still be okay. Like
There's actually one V-Class.
I don't have one.
Does he
have a branded one?
No, I sold it.
You sold the branded one. Why? Good financial decisions.
Yeah, can you apply economy?
The plan was to upgrade. What?
I have
your fucking car.
No, and also we don't talk about this, guys. We don't talk about this thing. I remember during during COVID, I mean, I took the Beamer back during COVID.
Sure.
I took it back. I was like, why am I spending 8,000 rand on a car? I hardly drive. I took it back. And the guys were like, hi. We need to talk about this thing. A lot of people don't want to talk about the fact that you can actually pass the ball back to the goalkeeper.
Yes.
Like, and that was the thing.
Oh, yeah, without actually feeling like you failed. Yes.
And I always say to people, there must be things that you own outright that might not necessarily be at your level at that time.
Sure.
But these are things that no one can take away. So during those times, right, I ended up selling the big SUV. Mm-hmm. And then I kept the smaller thing. But I bought myself just a Polo sedan for the office.
Sure.
Then when we sold the business and COVID hit, I realized I'm burning through so much money. Mm-hmm. I was like, take this thing back. Nai Polo. And a small Nyana van, like a half ton. I was like, I kept my van and my Polo.
Sure.
Half ton was for trips back to Eastern Cape.
Oh, of course.
And the farms.
My car,
I appreciate what you're saying now, but you know what grips a lot of people?
Yeah.
Bazotina band.
Yes.
Which is the worst thing you can think of.
At least Kim Chita, like park underground.
Something.
Like park underground. You don't need to go to Chemeli at the top. Park underground.
Hey,
park underground.
May I love Alex.
Alessandro. No, it's my dog. Yeah, yeah. So park underground, bro. And also there, they stop you at the thing.
They're
There's that guy in the vest.
My brother.
And he's a bouncer. He's not a car guy.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's the only one who drives them up there because there's some guys that don't want to be seen with their cars. So they go in under the thing and then the guys drive up. So don't be that guy.
Well, that's how you know who's who's. There's the guys who don't want to be seen with their cars, and then there's the guys who insist on being seen.
Yeah, there's the guys who are smart about it, and then there's guys who are stupid. Yeah,
yeah, no, I'm just working it out. I've never parked at the top of
Chemeli. Because also the Rolex gang operates in those type of areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Zim, you are a wealth of knowledge in the first 5 minutes.
Love it, boss. But bro, we know, I mean, a lot of people know you, know the face now for facts, you know. I think, what is it called?
Which one?
No. On the YouTube series.
So here's something interesting.
So here's something interesting. Yeah. Here we go. Yeah. Mm. So
you are like the paper of Chappies.
the modern day version.
Do you know?
The digital version. Yeah, it's called. Yeah. I mean, look, bro. I look forward to every single post. I think now you've obviously moved over that to YouTube. No?
Yeah, a lot of it. So the focus is kind of moved to YouTube so that you can grow and be a platform. So you're not a platform until you're on most and all platforms that optimize for your medium. So if you're like video is the medium, so you got to be on all of them.
All
so
the
that
video platforms. 100%.
I want to rewind before we get to obviously how we know you today. Like what's your story? Obviously we've spoken about why. We've spoken about
but you mentioned, like you mentioned that Plum, you sold the business.
Sure. Yeah, we sold the business. Yes. Yeah.
Sure. When was that?
2019. Okay. 2019, just before. It was kind of fortuitous, but in 2019.
It was kind of what?
Fortuitous.
I don't know.
Women in tech.
Women in tech, please.
It was kind of fortuitous.
Hey, it sounds like future. What?
Foresaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What's that? The meaning of fortuitous?
Yes.
Oh.
So yeah, future, whatnot.
Fortitude.
I was very fortunate.
Oh, I went now fortuitous.
But if we rewind back, I always think that it's important for people to understand like how the digital landscape in South Africa like formulated, right? And we were part of those guys that crafted a way. The way that certain companies, like for instance, not the state broadcaster, the other guys, right? How they grew in terms of speaking a persona online, we crafted that in like 2016, 17, right? And a lot of companies, we were like digital ninjas. We didn't put it out there that this is what we're doing for companies or whatever. Mm-hmm. We'd come in, become part of your management, your marketing and management guys, and we'd help you kind of get better, like outward to the world, and we wouldn't put it out there. But before that, why? I always tell the story. At why, I know how to DJ, funny enough, because I learned at why. But I never DJed because I was... I was preoccupied.
Thank you.
With, No, this guy, right? This guy and more flavor.
Sure.
When spring day comes and the spring weekend, these guys would have like 14 gigs. Like, and I'd be like, what is Chacha Malin? I'd be like, you are Malinga. Mm. But that allure of wanting to do what everyone else was doing at the time at Y, it's something that luckily for me never got to me. So I used to go upstairs and chill with Ayanda Tikise, and he taught me how to sell and plan for media. So I learned how to media plan and media buy.
Yeah, he's at MultiChoice now.
So I learned, he taught me how to do this thing. I would sit with him. Our show, we used to end at 12. And then from 12 until 5 or 6, whenever he leaves, I'd sit with him and we'd build presentations. I'd help him. He'd be like, hey, I want to build a presentation for brand X and whatever. I'd be like, no, wait, here, I'll do it. And then you can tell me if I'm going right or wrong.
Nice.
So that was important. Then I realized, he hit me up. I was like, because you're on air, when you come here, we can give you a 1:5. So in other words, for every rand you bring in, yeah, we'll give you 5.
Nice.
I was like, hold up. That's how I got into media planning and media buying, right?
You
and
sold then I your realized, stuff discount.
100%.
Wash.
And then I combined all these guys that had like open air picnics, right? Pretoria guys, Joburg. I bring them into one thing for the season and say, I know you want to be on Y and you want to advertise on Y, but I know that you don't have that much spend. But if you give me like 60, 70 grand, I can stretch that out for you to a point where you're getting like almost like an OB or at least a call in from your event or whatever.
Like a 300.
100%. Nice. You're getting a lot. So I would pull all these guys' things together and then give them more value. So that's how I ended up not needing to be a DJ.
It wasn't a need thing.
Sure.
At the time, we're having 17 gigs a weekend.
100%.
Nah, sure. But at the time on Y, honestly, if you were a technical producer or even if you worked behind the scenes, if you said, I'm a YFM DJ, give me gigs.
You're gonna move. Yeah, we're gonna move. So
for you to say, I'm grand, let me focus here.
100%. Because I'd always wanted to get into the space of understanding how they make money in media.
Sure.
And that more long term was more beneficial for me.
Yes. The real money. 100%. Not the,
still is.
Yeah, it still is, right? Yeah. Because it doesn't matter whether people know me or not. I'm still putting together campaigns across the country.
Shout out.
Across radio, TV, digital, whatnot. And that expertise has always made, whether times are rough or whatever, there's something, someone's always trying to do something.
There's sustainability in that.
100%. And now we need to own infrastructure, guys, because we're also old enough where we say to ourselves, we must own the billboards. We must own the digital billboards.
Yes.
We're the ones that must fly to China and bring them in, because there's something that I always call like, what do you call this thing? Like a burra tax. Because a lot of the, like Maburu, they went to China a long time ago.
Sure.
And they built networks. That's where you get businesses like a Naspers. Sometimes that's how you get businesses like a Mr. Price. They went there first. We're not going there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that we buy is made in China, right? One. But also, you are paying a tax. Someone brought it, did work, did whatever.
Sure.
But if you go there, you get a discount, right? If you do
you
the work.
You jumping into the queue when the Maburu have already brought it
100%.
Here. When you are like the third 100%. In the queue.
Yeah. So that gives us an opportunity to also grow something. And I always say to people, go there and build network, especially people within the entertainment space like yourselves.
Sure.
Prue, we've got to keep going up against and competing with companies, the massive gear companies, right? And you know those guys, right?
Yeah.
We've got to go. You can't host a massive festival, outdoor fest, and you're still spending like 2 million rand on just the
equipment,
setup of stage, right? You've got to own that in-house.
Yes, because they're the only guys that you can go to.
100%, bro.
Yeah. So what he's speaking about is I really want to give a shout out to the guys at Rands in Cape Town.
Yeah.
What those guys have done, they've built the community, they've made the dollar, and they keep going to go own all the infrastructure. So every single week, when those guys have like a massive setup, it's their own stuff.
Yeah.
It's their own equipment. It's their own
team.
That's
how it should be.
Yeah, you know, so it's very, I love to hear these kind of stories from other people, you know, speaking on behalf of other people.
Yeah.
Very dope. Very nice.
The other thing about it is that when you go backwards, people always say, like, how did you know you could get into like advertising and this type of stuff and whatever? I always think that it's not a mistake. And I think it's a combination of various things. One, I grew up and my grandfather was a pastor. So most Sundays I'd watch him tell stories, right? Interpret a text and tell the story. The second thing was that I was always very fascinated with what language was able to do to people.
Sure.
Right? Just the ability to speak in a particular language. And that's something that kind of came up in Joburg when I started to understand a lot of the Joburg languages in order for me to be able to relate to you.
Sure.
Even if Ntetang is Xhosa, I must still be able to hear you fully.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
That was one of the things.
My everyday struggle.
100%. but in high school, the real key thing that got me into advertising was an advert, right? It was an advert that was like on FHM. So it was literally an ad. On the first page, it's blue and it says 3. And the next, you flip over, it says 2. On the next one, it flips over, it says the reason why all countdowns ended 1, introducing the new BMW 1 Series.
Oh, nice.
Like, it blew my mind. Imagine, like, I'm in like standard 7, nice. I'm in grade 9. Mm. And the thing, like, boom, it hits me. Yeah,
you were in grade 9, Pumi 1 Series.
So it literally blew my mind away.
That's power.
And because the way those words moved and whatever, and I was like, I want to kind of like do this, but I didn't know how to make money from it, right?
Sure.
And then,
because at the time you had obviously no point of reference, you just knew that hey, this one worked.
Yeah, like bro, like a bicho outside East London, like 50 something k's outside East London. So my reference to the world was. Was pretty much what I could get in those things. And
limited,
also, I think I was a little bit coconut in those days. So you find that those things kind of shape you. And that's how you... Then, by the time I got to matric, I started a school newspaper. It still exists till this day. It's called the Daily and Dispatch.
Sure.
Right? I was the one who... I looked at it and I was like, we don't have a school newspaper. We don't have a way to write our own...
Daily Dispatch. Smart.
So we... We started to do this thing, myself and a mate, Tulani Kali. We started to do this thing together. Yeah. Mm. So we started to do this thing together and we pushed it and it still exists. It's the craziest thing, right? I'm like, what? Like 19 years out of high school. I go back there and Oaks is still selling this thing and it's part of the, like,
nice.
It's part
and
of the ethos
in
the school. And I'm like,
nice.
Whoa, that's so crazy. And they're like, oh, you're the guy that started this thing. It's crazy. So that's where the advertising and understanding words and medium comes from. But the real killer thing was COVID, guys. Mm. So how I get to this thing is COVID. I'm watching stuff like in America, in Europe, right, in South America, and I'm sitting to myself, I'm going, in South Africa, we don't have data-driven stories.
Sure.
We have opinion-based stories, and we wait for journalists to tell us how to feel about a story.
Yes, yes.
So I was like, no. And at the time, I'm watching Johnny Harris, right, this amazing YouTuber.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, man, we've got the data around this because a lot of people always nyat South African data. Mm-hmm. Stats SA is brilliant. CSIR, they've CSIR they're strong.
Sure, sure.
And if you just go
the numbers were on the money 100%, recently, all
bro.
The time.
And if you go into, we've got amazing scientists who collate data all the time around stuff.
Sure.
In fact, one of the key things that I want everybody to know and understand is that the problems that supposedly... South Africa has that maybe other countries don't seem to have is because they don't know how to report or are not reporting the numbers the way South Africa reports its numbers. Because there's a form of like of being ethical in our scientists and our people that work with numbers that we need to know what's actually happening in order for us to be able to fix it. Gotcha. So you find that was one of the things for me. Then the last thing was that mainstream media became so negative in this country.
It became so negative that
I stopped watching the news.
Mm.
And then it was only on that point that I said, but if everything is as terrible as we say it is in this country, how are we still number one on the continent?
Sure.
Right? In terms of goods and services.
Like,
how are we across all metrics. I don't know of a metric where South Africa is actually less than other African countries. Maybe you could say safety, Botswana, because they don't have as many people, etc.
Sure.
There's kind of those countries that you can extrapolate, but I don't know where South Africa in across any metric, and you can give me where South Africa is not top 3 on the continent.
Sure.
What we then do as South Africans, and we were having a discussion with the guys at Brand South Africa yesterday or whatever. So I'm going to Brazil next week or whatever for the youth.
Is it youth
Dogs of Life.
Dango.
For the Youth Alliance. So when we went through those numbers, guys, and this is so important, when we went through those numbers, South Africans are inherently negatively perceptive of anything that has to do with South Africa, even when the data is telling you that it's actually positive.
South Africans are negatively perceptive of their own country.
100%.
South Africans are negative.
And that translates into us talking to people and promoting South Africa in a negative light first. Someone says, you're flying on a plane back to Jersey, right?
Mm.
It's a foreign person who's there with you. And this happened to me. I'm listening to this guy, right? And unfortunately, it was a white guy. Mm-hmm. I'm flying to SA, white lady, we're flying in from Paris, right? And this lady's so excited to finally be coming to South Africa. It's her first time because South Africa is a once-in-a-lifetime destination for people, right?
Mm. I was going to, that's what I was going to lead to is what are they thinking about us when we are thinking,
so the lady's so excited. Mm. It takes longer for this person to book their flight. Mm. Think about all the preparation has to go into these type of destinations. She's coming there and she goes, oh, like she asks this guy, and it's a white guy. She asks him, like, what is there to expect when I get to South Africa? Like, she's excited. Oh, white guy.
Don't tell me. You know what he said, BH?
Yeah, the crime.
No, he said, black people.
Oh, black people are a problem, bro.
It's a problem, come bro.
Come on, you gotta admit it, bro. So, come on, black people are a problem.
So this guy he went in and he absolutely demolished the country. I literally turned around and I was like, it's actually not as bad as what he's making it. Because I was getting annoyed. Mm. And the guy was
saying, what was he saying?
No, but it happened.
Bro, obviously, the crime, definitely don't go to these places. And I was like, you're using negativity to drive the experience of somebody who's coming here for the first time. Right?
To drive
this is the problem we have. And I'll say there's other people like an Adrian Gore. When he spoke about South Africa, and that's the type of people we need. He was like, yo, bro. Like, when people ask me, and I'm, like, at the World Economic Forum and all these places, and they ask me, like, is it really as bad in South Africa? He says, we have it tough like other places, but we're definitely building something down there.
Nice.
And that's important.
Nice.
Well, there's no country. Adrian Gore, billionaire.
No, obvious. Okay. And I want people like that to speak to positively. To be the ambassador. Because you're obviously caking it here, bro.
Sure.
You can't be like,
he's killing it,
though. South Africa is a terrible country.
Sure.
You're caking it, bro.
Sure.
You make billions
so
a year.
So it's got influence, of course. So
Uba Afoge on the flight, who was he? Like, I'm not saying you personally, but when you looked at him, you were like, white time.
On
an international flight.
He wasn't even that old.
Oh, okay.
It's a guy maybe in his mid-40s, mm-hmm. right? Who probably hates the fact that South Africa is a country that's trying to do something that doesn't prioritize abelungu. So he's feeling some type of way.
He's not geared in his favor.
So guys, there's crime everywhere. Mm. There's crime in Brazil, right?
Sure.
Our profile as a country is similar to Brazil's profile, right? But you don't hear people saying, I won't go to Rio. I won't go to Sao Paulo, right?
Mm.
People don't speak like that. Exactly. But it's us who are ambassadors of the country who go to these places and actually debase our own country when we realize that these problems exist everywhere. People fly to like a Portugal and be like, oh, I got mugged in Portugal. But that's not going to be like, that's not going to be like as mainstream as it is.
Yes.
But you don't hear Portuguese people saying, don't go to Lisbon. Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Don't go to Porto. Don't go to whatever. So
they speak proudly of it.
That's a beautiful 100%. Place. Go to the beaches.
So we need to shift our perception as South Africans. And that's why I do what I do.
Sure.
Because as much as I can, I try to be neutral on the thing and I try to be positive.
Mm.
I want to be a portal of positivity as much as I can. Yes, there are terrible things happening in South Africa, like other places around the world.
Mm.
But we need a different perspective. And I promise you go through my comments, there will be trolls. But there's a large contingent of people who like, I didn't know this, and this is important for me to know that things are not this bad.
And you're making the videos for a global audience as well. You're not making them to say to South. But
well,
hopefully
I think
South Africans who come across it can then pick up to say, you know what, maybe I should change the way I speak. 100%.
As someone who consumes his content, bro, I'm always fascinated about the stats. I'm just like, oh, as a South African, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know this about the roads. I didn't know this about the agriculture. I didn't know this about business, you know?
He puts the work in.
Yeah.
Shout out. And I think it was also a way to differentiate myself because I think a lot of times the ease with which people can pick up a phone and record something is, I like that because it means that we're all kind of connected.
Yes.
But at the same time, it lends itself to lack of credibility when you get things wrong.
Sure.
So I always tell people, anything I've ever said, bro, that's, because I do have a portion in my stuff where it's like, this is my opinion. And I state it. I'm like, I believe that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But the stats are the stats. That's why I've never had any person come to me and say to me, no, that guy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Because I actually, if you want, I can give you a story I did maybe 2 years ago. I can even show you my links where I got the stuff from, where the research came from. And that's important.
Someone who referenced in high school?
100%. Because that credibility.
Someone who knew how to reference.
Yeah. So it's kind of, that's where we are in South Africa, bro. We've got to build our own platforms. And I hope that within the next like year or so, I will be in a position where I can say to myself, okay, let's really go and create a news platform, new age news platform.
Got you.
Right?
Not new age.
I was actually about to...
It's in those guys.
I was about to ask you what's... I mean, in terms of what's next for you,
yeah.
I mean, would you get yourself in parliament or would you, you know, to change the narrative, to change how things are perceived in this country, to make the active change, would you get into yourself, like into
parliament? Parliament, no. I don't think the parliamentary work is work that would
necessitate change.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
Sure. You'd be wasting your time there.
It wouldn't enthuse me because okay. I don't think that as an institution it's geared for real change. Guys. Mm. I don't think so. And this is, again, I state clear, this is my opinion. And the reason I say that is because there's a difference between like a constitutional democracy and a parliamentary democracy.
Sure.
And we've got to understand something as South Africans, that there's a lot of things that we are told we can change. You know, you can be the change, but like, really?
Be realistic.
Be realistic. Like, no, guys. No. The framework, the frameworks that exist really, really hinder the possibility for actual change in this country. And funny enough, I know we didn't want to speak about this, but post the elections, I've been having conversations with different types of people and even just before, on podcasts, etc. And I've started to realize, no, man, this thing, have you ever noticed in South Africa, and ask yourself this question, whenever there's a real massive issue or a societal thing that we've got, there's a grouping of people and NGOs that always run to the Constitutional Court. They bypass all the courts.
Mm-hmm.
They go past Regional Court, High Court, Supreme Court. They go straight to Constitutional Court. Why? Why is it, if you walk in to a building and there's no toilet paper in the first floor, do you go to the 50th floor and tell the CEO, I've got toilet paper in the first floor? No. Then you start to ask yourself, why is there this behavior of always running to the Constitution whenever something is as simple as us having a discussion?
Wait now, give us a real world example.
Land.
Okay.
Land.
So on the land issue, they bypassed everyone. They went straight to the
Uber. Yes, to block.
Yeah. Or to block. Like, okay. No, I thought to Vula.
No, not no. To Vula, to block, okay. Right? And it's true.
So
guys,
the discussion was taking place here.
Yes.
They said,
let's solve it here, guys.
Mm.
Let's agree here.
Yes.
Then when they see, hey, Siyashaya, mama vote la.
Yeah.
They go up there. That's why also the land question has now been separated into property rights and land. And I agree with that.
Mm.
Because what we don't want to do, we don't want to infringe on property rights, because those enshrine and create the possibility for wealth for the next generation. That's how countries build wealth.
That
through
would be
things.
A fuck up. Yes. You just start saying to PH, yes. Bafo.
So your cribs, yeah. Bring it here. So we're not saying that. What we're saying is land that can become economically viable is important to be apportioned correctly in the country to redress a lot of things. One, a landless people or people that don't have the options. And when people don't have options, bro, if the poor are hungry, the rich will not sleep.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. We must have this conversation.
No.
And we
if we are hungry, my man, we come for you, nigga.
Exactly. And we as the middle class.
Why are you looking at me? I'm not rich.
Oh. You won't sleep.
We're
going to pull up.
You're lying.
I was not overseas. Leave me alone.
No, yes. On that point that you raised, they are not about what you just explained, Uguti. What we are asking for is land that is
that
economically
can
viable.
Economically viable.
Right.
Yeah.
That is not how it's explained at all. Unfortunately,
yes.
It's explained as you want land, we'll give you land.
Property rights. They say we'll take property rights. No.
Bad idea.
Terrible.
Because no one is going to go for that, bro. That's just a shit idea.
It's
and terrible. Every time I see it online, remember, it's also like, it's kind of, it's gotten into the psyche of people to a point where they are galvanized in one direction.
Simple
same
thinking,
way
sure. Simple thinking.
They speak about the country negatively.
Yes.
Sure.
It's on the land question.
Yeah.
You have to support this thing wholeheartedly or else where now you don't
you're
understand
against,
that. And then it's like,
you're
no,
against.
Yes. Yeah. But then it's like in the Nikuluma, you can't take away people's property rights. Everything else will collapse. And then the land is fucking useless.
And,
it's pointless as having grass.
And what's really important is for us to start having...
No, guys, let me... Wait. Listen.
No, I'm fine.
Right, listen, right? Honestly, from personal experience, I'll tell you guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
We have land as a family,
right?
And me being the only male of my generation, you can consider me in charge of that land.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, I've got one side of the family the Zulus.
Yeah.
Right? And then you've got the other side of the family, the bougie ones,
yeah,
who have now moved away from Ekai.
Yeah.
And these ones are like, yo, this land, dog, we got to get, you know, the something, legalities gotta, yeah, of whatever, whatever, mm, whatever. And I'm looking at the land as like, how can we make money with this land? Because
yes, sure,
right now, it just costs fucking money.
Yes.
It's, every it's, month, there's rates and taxes that
you
have to be
pay
paid.
For it, yeah.
Dude,
sure,
it's like, it's not a lot, but it's like $4,000.
Like fencing, even. Like, you see, people are now going in and out of your land.
People are now going in. There's people that have invaded the land.
Yeah.
There's about like 30-something houses on the land that are not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Whose headache is it?
Yeah.
My
yours.
Yeah. The family's headache.
Yeah.
You go to the municipality there to say, Exe, it's our place since 1906, dog.
Yeah.
It belonged to like my great-great grand.
Yeah.
Right? We, this side of the family is like, the land, we got to get the land, bro.
Yeah. Sure. The other side
and
is
the
like,
other side is like, oh, what a fucking headache. Fuck
it,
that.
Just, sure, just leave it.
And
sure,
I'm like, where do we meet in the middle,
yes,
to make money from this land?
Economically
now,
viable,
yes,
bro.
What I've picked up is, mm, that ngapa, they're,
yeah,
just thinking in terms of, hey, Melibuye,
yeah,
that's our land.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers must get off.
Yeah.
And this side of the family is like, ah, whatever, have
headache,
the land, because it's just grass.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do we make money from it?
True.
What you're explaining,
yeah,
people are not where I am.
Yeah.
They are here. Hey, it must come back.
It must,
yeah,
come back.
Yes. They're not saying, ah, oh, it's a headache, I see food.
Yeah.
But they're also not saying, since I can't animal.
Very true.
You understand?
Very
so
true.
You look at like a land like the Ingonyama Trust.
Yes.
The Ingonyama Trust belongs to the king and, mm, Zulu people. Right?
Yes. He is
but
the custodian.
He's the custodian, rather.
Sure.
Of,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
My thing is, what's going on that land? Like,
yeah,
if we look at every square inch,
yeah,
there's economic viability there.
Yes.
That land can be used to farm, can 100%. Grow food, that food can
there's,
then...
There's also Northern KZN, you find that there are coal deposits part of the... I think it's the... I don't want to say it wrong, but there's a coal deposit that starts from Bo Emelo all the way down,
yes,
into northern KZN.
That's where I'm from.
100%.
In Freire.
Yes.
You've got, yeah,
so
yeah, Newcastle Freire, that side.
It's called... I think it's called the Daker. I'll stand corrected, but
coal deposits,
belt.
Yes,
yes,
yeah.
So Dacre Mines was,
yeah,
there, Lancaster Precast,
yes,
they're all on these, and it goes all the way till Loughsburg.
Yes.
But they stopped mining coal there in,
yeah,
the late 80s because, yeah, pale.
Yeah. Sure.
Now with new technology.
They can go deeper.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Making that land astronomically
very
more valuable,
viable.
With, than it was once, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, when the chat happens, it,
yeah,
doesn't happen in this way where people have a comprehensive understanding of what do we want,
what do we,
how are we going to get it.
What do we actually,
sure,
mean by,
yes,
land?
Because,
right,
now we're saying, we want the land back. Kanjan, take,
mm,
it away.
Mm.
Expropriation without compensation.
Mm.
No.
Yes.
We do still want the land back. I'm not against you, but this is a shit way of acquiring it.
Yes.
Then it's like, okay, we acquired the Zimasa way.
Yeah.
Fusayekwen, that's going to take too long. See,
yeah,
now mine.
Exactly.
And
this is the conversation I was having around how to systematically do it. And it's a very simple exercise. Government has land, right?
They've got the fucking most. That's
but,
the killer.
But no, but I want to
dude,
make it.
Dude, they've got like 700 and something thousand.
But
hectares.
I want to make it clear, more than that, it's a lot. So I want to make it clear.
Mm.
What we are saying, all of the land that is owned by government is not only agricultural land.
Sure.
They own strategic deposits of land. For instance, are you really going to count the land that is 100 meters either side of a highway? Why would you do that? Because it's there for expansion.
Sure.
So we should eliminate land like that.
Sure.
There is national key point land that is needed.
Mm.
For instance, government owns land around Pelindaba in Nartis.
Mm.
You can't count that land. It's around a non-operational nuclear facility.
Sure.
So you can't count
right.
that land.
Yes, sure.
So there's certain land that you must take away. That's why I stipulate agricultural land that has the possibility of gaining economic viability.
Mm.
That is the land we need to be having conversations about. Then, that's the first one. The second one is land that is lying fallow or unused.
Sure.
That either has or doesn't have properties on it.
Mm.
So what does this mean? It means strategically, it could be a farm that's not being used, one, right? Where the guys decided, I'm off to Australia,
mm.
right?
I'm leaving it behind.
So what recourse do we have? Because you've decided to leave.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
That's one. The next bit of land is land that we know is in commercial hands, mm. right? Has a very sticky past, right?
Sure.
Likely was either taken at the bottom of the barrel, forced removals,
mm.
land acts, whatnot. And we're saying to you, farmer, We know that a lot of farmers in this country do not have the economic muscle to farm all of their land.
Yes.
We are saying it's not possible. When you with like 10,000 hectares of land, my brother, you're not farming all of it. ZZ2. You're not ZZ2. You don't have that money. So what we're saying is that the land that is there, that is not being used, and we can, you can't even lie to us. We can literally just take satellite images for the past like 20, 30 years and look at what you've been doing on the land. We don't need you to tell us that, no, I use that corner as a camp. We can literally be like, you haven't been using it, bro. So we're saying that land is the land that we want to go for next, right? Sure. Where it can be economically viable to do so. Then we're also at the same time going to combine the possibilities of funding people in those communities. Then we're going to ask communities, do you want to farm? Because that's another important thing.
Yeah, do maybe you I don't want to live on a farm.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you want to farm? They say, yes. How many of you are there? There are X amount. We're going to put you through TVET colleges for free to learn how to farm this land. But it's not going to happen now. Again, as I said, it's not a now thing. But if you do have kids who have come through that TVET, who don't have work, etc., then we quickly know there's capacity in this thing.
Sure.
There are maybe 13, 14 young people who have gone through this TVET college and are sitting at home. We're saying, okay, perfect. We need just one person to look after them. This is when now white people must come to the party. That's why this thing's got to be consultative. We've got to say to that farmer, my brother, we knew that you couldn't farm this extra 5,000 hectares. There are these kids that want to farm this land. We're going to give them inputs because this already exists in government. There are already inputs for agricultural farming, etc. Then we're going to say, okay, these kids, if you help these kids to a particular point and level where they can export and or sell their products, you get a share or you get tax rebates.
Good point. Yeah.
So we don't need,
doing it for free.
No, my brother, you're doing it for free.
Yeah.
We'll still lease it back to you at the rate that government sees it to be economically viable. Because there's a way of evaluating the actual value of a piece of land. The one that you are using obviously has an actual value.
Sure.
I plant stuff, cabbages, whatever, and I use it as camps. This land is obviously not as valuable as that land. So you can't say, no, that land is worth as same as that price per hectare. So we can easily work that out. And that's why I say there's a little bit of strong arming, but there's a little bit of just logic and coming to the table on this thing.
Because what people, I think, need to get to is that the land is worth something if you can make it make
sense.
Owning the grass, no. And owning it outright from the farmer, I promise you.
Yeah.
What are you going to do as a young person?
Leave that guy there.
It's a big ask.
Leave all the farmers there.
Leave them. Let them leave farm. Them but also, there. Get skills from them.
100%.
These niggas have been farming for generations.
100 years. You know? Easy. So those are some of the things that we need to have a discussion about. And we need to unpack these things so that everybody is conscientized in the right way around these things. So that when somebody comes to you and says, we must take the land, you say, my brother, which land?
Which one?
Which one? Because, Mina, I want the agricultural one.
Sure.
I don't want a piece of land that I can't
and
do anything with.
Most of them
with.
Wouldn't be able to answer that.
Exactly.
You see, they come and say, give the land.
If we
land?
Specifically talk about agricultural land, then we are having the right conversation.
Sure.
So those are some of the things that I think as South Africans, we need to create a better level playing field for everybody to understand and not to let people tell us on either side, far right and far left, what exactly they are saying, and then we in the center who want a better future but don't want to destroy anything are sitting there going, they're allowed this time.
Yeah. And they're always on extremes. The one side is saying, no, if you let that happen, we'll turn into Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then the other side is saying, give everything, fuck you.
Sure.
And if we don't deal with the land issue and get in front of it, the land issue will get in front of us and we will be dealing with people that are aggressive and don't want to conversate. They don't want to.
I'm super impressed.
I'm also super impressed.
I won't lie to you.
How many of us are there that think like that, though?
Not enough, but it's important that there are, and I can popularize stuff. Last thing.
You're good at this, right?
Last thing. Sure. How do white people start to right the wrongs of apartheid? I have a very simple solve for this.
Okay, tell us.
It's not the TRC.
You literally just start with one simple thing. So you took away generations, the possibility and the future of generations of South Africans. Why don't you contribute to the future? I'll tell you how. Education. NSFAS has, I think, a budget of about, 50, 80 billion. You can fact check me, per year. It's not enough. What if, white businesses contributed and matched the money that NSFAS needs, and then you make education at varsity level free for everyone who passes. Just a thought.
Right.
What that suddenly starts to do is that you have now opened up the possibility of future generations of South Africans to have a better future. It will not necessarily directly fix what you did, but it starts to create a better footing for all kids, truly all kids. You let government deal with basic education and higher education. Immediately someone passes and passes well enough to get into a thing, then it's free. You know, I just need to get to varsity. And then I'm coasting all the way through. It takes away the stress the students have of passing of whatever. It also equalizes, like what people always say, it truly equalizes and says we're all fair. Because not a single cent will be paid. Not even imali registration. You pay nothing. You register and you get in. Whether you're black, you're white, you're Indian, you're colored, whatever.
For everyone.
As long as Upasa, the country and this fund started together will fix South Africa.
Mm. What do you call that fund? Because isn't it currently called the Solidarity?
They do have something like that, but it needs to be... That kind of does stuff like that, but we need this one to specifically do this thing.
For that.
Yeah. Then we're going to be rolling out engineers, people that don't flunk out and decide, I don't have enough money. Person's 2 years into civil engineering, he's ready, but he doesn't have the money. Mm. And NSFAS won't fund him.
Is there any statistic on the NSFAS people?
Yeah.
Who actually, pay I don't want to be a duress.
You know,
be
the duress. It's important.
You know, no, not to say that are not deserving of it.
Yeah.
It's to say, me and PH both need NSFAS.
Yeah.
I'm a diligent student. Yeah. I did well. Maybe my average was 70%.
Yeah. Sure.
PH's average was 55%.
Yeah.
He doesn't really care.
Yeah.
His parents are putting him under pressure to go to varsity. He takes the NSFAS loan. He gets there. He's fucking bitches drinking beer. Just fucking around with the government's money. He lost maybe 1 year in this course. Jump in another course. Shinja food. Jump in those guys.
Sounds like most of our SRC guys. What?
No.
Sounds like most of the guys.
During Fees Must Fall, right? I'm not pointing any fingers to any Fees Must Fall agent. But a big thing was when the movement started, dude, everybody was like, man, these fucking kids are right, dog.
Sure.
Why are they paying so much money? Because of financial reasons.
Yeah.
Come on, let's make fees fall, right?
Yeah.
Then they started burning stuff. Abelungu were like, sorry, can't support that.
Black
people.
Next thing, next thing what happens, we find out that the Oak leading the movement is 34 and he's on his third degree and he's on NSFAS and he lives at Rez and we're like, Eva, abuse the system.
They were like,
We're thinking it's for that 18-year-old from Eastern Cape
who's just come through.
You know, I knew one. He didn't get NSFAS.
Yeah.
Right? That's why I'm saying at the time, he didn't get NSFAS, this dude. And he had a sponsor and the sponsor used to give.
Yeah.
I used to give other people, but he was really brilliant.
Yeah.
Sure. And I thought to myself, fuck, this guy's really deserving of NSFAS.
Yes.
But nah, Babant.
Yes.
Fucking turning police vans over and burning them.
Yeah.
You understand?
I know exactly.
I just felt
about.
Like, I'm not about this now because now we're getting into territory where it's like, you want us to support your movement, but you're 32 years old and your third degree, why don't you make space?
Totally agree with you. There's a very interesting point I want to add to that. NSFAS is a loan. It's not a grant.
Mm-hmm.
When it started, and Yamo Shagala, a long time ago, this thing, you were meant to, when you start working, to pay the money back so that others may go to school.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is important. And South Africans don't want to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Oguti, there's so many people, you see them, they'll say, election's over now. Hey, I can finally speak. Yeah, no, me, I'm a beneficiary of NSFAS. I've got my PhD because I went straight through the system, etc.
But do now you
I'm
pay saying, back?
Did you pay
do
back?
You pay them? Do you know how much money there is to get to PhD? And you have 10, Baba. The country paid from when you
A lot of people don't pay
exactly.
back.
Exactly. So
a lot.
We need to have the conversation that when we look at government and we say, you guys, you're doing bad. We need to look at ourselves and say, we have a culture of non-payment in this country.
Yeah.
We have a culture.
Can you make them pay? Because if you don't pay back, what happens?
Government can, but then it becomes like a grudge thing. Government can. Because SARS makes you pay.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
No,
SARS makes you pay.
Sure. I was going to ask, obviously, when getting this loan, surely there's an agreement to say, okay, cool, once.
No, there is.
But now why? So who's at fault in recouping that money back?
It's Gov, but also it's a soft issue, PH. It's not a hard issue. Hard issue is SARS. Mm. Soft issue is like, bro, but like this was in kind.
Sure.
In order for other people to go to things, you're supposed to declare, I've started working now and pay some of the money back. And this is not to mean you must pay all of it back. It means start paying back and then see where we get to. Yes. Like in America, they don't play. Your student loan is a serious hard loan. So these are some of the things that we need to have conversations about as South Africans. But it's tough, right? It's tough because Gov doesn't want to further squeeze the middle class because they're bloody well squeezing us, right? And everything is being taxed, et cetera, et cetera. And we're having those conversations. So adding another visible tax becomes tricky because I feel there's ways that government can save money in this country. Like
simple, where they wouldn't have to
like
tax.
Like, guys, the road accident fund, we need to have chats about that. Mm. 10 billion goes to lawyers every year.
We've literally
got to have that conversation around RAF, bro. Yeah. I understand public liability on our roads. It makes sense. But how is the RAF, guys, every year, I know I'm geeky as hell. I read their report, right, for the previous years. These folks are spending 2 billion over every year. Over. Yeah. RAF must spend what it brings in.
Sure.
Because it gets money from every time you pour gas, diesel, whatever. RAF gets a portion of that.
But
right?
Now you sound like an asshole because if the budget is depleted and I was in an accident and I'm paralyzed,
the budget, there's enough. If you minus the 10 billy that goes to lawyers, RAF is in the profit, bro.
The plus. Okay. Should it be then the lawyers that help the people with RAF, should they work pro bono?
There should be a limit.
No.
Vibe.
We should figure out a way of making the claim system of RAF digital
beneficial to the
actual just normal. That thing does not need lawyers, guys. It only needs lawyers when people need to prove certain things and whatnot and etc. So we need to figure out a way. Do we then say to ourselves, how do we cut
middleman.
Maybe like middleman half? Even if you say to me, ref will now pay out 5 billion in lawyers' fees. You then rope in the insurance companies to say, vet these claims and we'll only get up to this point. Sure. So we're only going to pay up to 5 billion. We've already saved 5 billion.
Gotcha.
5 billion a year.
With one simple change. Because now it seems that there's law firms that exist purely for RAF.
Yes!
I don't want to say this one.
You know each other.
Tell me. Markle.
Oh, yes. I don't want to say people's names. I'll sue you.
Say allegedly.
Yeah?
Say allegedly.
But Pilela Hiding.
No, Pilela Hiding. Yeah? He's all his ads, that guy. Mike. All his ads. Oh, Mike.
I'm WhatsApping you his name.
Yeah.
No, I'll read it out.
There's definitely like, and the business is on, I think, Jan Smart, or used to be on Jan Smart.
Yes.
Yeah. Mike exists for RAF, bro. Mm. And he knows, and he's been eating good for years.
But can I ask you on the RAF question, something I saw that was scandalous recently is they said RAF, a Zimbabwean, claimed with RAF like Boma 17 pars or something.
Jesus. So that's the other thing we need to fix.
Mm. Because said person wasn't actually a citizen.
Okay, so this is so tricky, now, guys. So there's what we call sort of like bilateral agreements and multilateral agreements or regional agreements. So we're part of SADC.
Mm.
That's why a person who has a driver's license in even DRC or Zambia can drive in South Africa.
Yes.
Right? Because we're part of a block of countries. That's why you can fly to Zambia and Lusaka and you can get a car and drive as a South African.
Mm.
The issue is that when that was done, there is also linkages to public liability. You know, PH knows a lot more about this. When you go overseas, you must have public liability insurance.
Yes.
Right? You must pay for it. So that you are insured against anything happening to you in the country.
Okay.
So I don't believe, and I stand to be correct, I don't believe that we put that as an imposition for people in the SADC region to have. So in other words, I'm going to South Africa. I need to have maybe 500. I need to have maybe an amount that's always there that pays into a pot that says, if anything were to happen to South Africa, to me in South Africa, as maybe as a Mozambican or someone from Botswana or a Namibian, I would then kind of take from this pool to sort out my issues that might have happened in the SADC region. I don't think we have a fund like that. Mm-mm. So therefore, RAF gets to take the burden off all road users that are using South African roads.
Mm. Is a requirement for your fund legal right to be in the country? Because if I sneak in and then nothing happens.
Oh, my brother, that's why South Africa, there's messy loopholes that exist because of these multilateral and bilateral things. It's that does happen because they say all road users, and it's very broad. They should literally go to the Road Accident Fund Act and change it to say all legal road users in South Africa.
Yes.
Right? All they persons, should. Yeah. They should. But,
but
then,
that's the lawyers.
But then Helen Suzman Foundation is going to be the first one up.
Yeah.
Dude, those fuckers. And they're the first one.
It's a big thing.
They come in with human rights, right?
Yes.
Not the worst times, but whenever they come in, it's always like to defend something that is extremely costly.
And so simple to see.
And so simple to see. But they're like, no, but human rights. Ganjan, no, and then it's like...
How are there refugees in Cape Town? Think about it. Think about it.
Those are the church.
Hey, well, think about how did you get to Cape Town?
Yeah, I know.
There should be a refugee camp by Musina.
Surely.
Right? So how are guys asking for asylum in Cape Town?
Dog.
How did you get there?
Yeah.
We need to have serious chats. Mm. But you see, I know immediately. Helen Suzman. Yeah. First one, Helen Suzman.
They do it with the buildings as well. Remember the building collapses, for example? These buildings that are in the CBD, it's just on that land question as well. The government owns a shitload of buildings that can be fixed and used for
immediately.
Housing and offices.
Especially in the CBD.
In the CBD, right? And in other CBDs, not only the Johannesburg CBD.
There's not a single Berea that's like decent in the country.
No.
Like think of a Berea and you just know it's run down.
But if the world was Berea is not bad. Berea is better than Hillbrow.
No, it's London Berea.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Okay. Is it like a point in Durban?
No.
I know. Like
Durban's like bad.
Point is getting to Hillbrow level, possibly beyond.
Yeah.
Angilwi. But anyway.
Bab.
They step in, right? Yeah. At a point where it's like, no. But it's more important for this person to be housed than it is for what you're saying.
For them to be sent back.
Sure. Yes. And then it's like, but you are housing them in a building that is about to collapse.
Sure.
We're not saying they shouldn't be in the building because it's ours. Get the fuck out. We're not even there yet.
Yeah.
We're saying they shouldn't be in the building because it is about to collapse. There's no running water. There's no electricity. It's pitch dark in there. People are getting raped. People are getting stabbed. Makes no sense. And they're like, no. They have a right to shelter. They go back to that one.
Yeah.
Constitution or wherever they find these fucking rules. And they're like, you can't take these people out of this building because they have a right to be here.
Sure.
Again, it could be something obvious where when you look at the conditions
like
that they're living in,
move.
You're like, no, dude, this is not acceptable. You cannot make people live like this.
Yeah.
They also are just cool because they know we're behind Helen Suzman and them.
Sure. Exactly.
You see, Angeng Nistinte. And it's like the ones at the church in Cape Town.
Like, how did you get to Cape Town and be a refugee there?
I saw a politician say on the point of refugee asylum thing.
Yeah.
He's like, no, usuka kanjani Congo.
Sure.
Undlula Zambia, undlula Zimbabwe,
Harare, everything.
To get here and say asylum. Asylum must be in the next door neighbor country.
Like Pulukwane, Tsanin, Musina, they should have a huge refugee problem.
Sure.
They should be like,
that's the first entry point.
Unama Campo.
No, stop it. I didn't say that. But I'm saying,
hey, hi, Gauteng.
Stop it. I'm not saying that. So what's important to note is that there are certain things, as you rightly say, Waras, that are so clear for people to see. And we need to have a better understanding of this thing. And it's true. Zimbabwe's problems are our problems.
Sure.
It's true. But at the same time, can we shore up the border? Because if we do that, then we start to have, what's the actual situation? Because if we don't even have the data and the numbers, right? We're all having an opinion-based discussion.
Mm.
Because government should come there and say, from what we have extrapolated, there are 10,000 people coming in every 2 weeks or something. Mm. Then we say, do we think that's a problem?
Mm. As a country? And their numbers are always off.
Oh, no one has the numbers, guys. Sure. No one has the numbers. And until we start to have the numbers, or we say to ourselves, we're going to partner with farmers on the border of the Limpopo, and we're going to put sentry towers that are going to track and just motion track and count for just 1 month and see what the problem, like how big is this problem, right, as a start. So that, because also emotion is a big problem. South Africans are emotional, right? So we might be like, it's a big problem. Some people are like, no, it's not. You guys are exaggerating based off our ideologies around the issue. And we shouldn't have that. We should have data to back up our feelings.
Yes.
Is it a problem or isn't a problem? Isn't it a problem? The other thing, you've got the ZEPs, right? The Zimbabwe permits, which were the permits that were dished out for people when they came here seeking
to work.
Yes,
to work.
Work.
Okay.
So it's a very simple thing. Let's do an audit.
Cancel all of them.
Let's do an audit. Hold on, hold on. Let's do an audit. Figure out who's still working under those permits. Sure. Who does it still apply to? Are you a skilled laborer in South Africa? Mm. Do you work? Is it gainful employment? Does it make sense? Sure. Can it be backed up? Are you registered with the thing? Perfect, sir. You keep you yours, or we give you residency if you stay there for long enough. Mm. You, my brother or my sister, it's not going to work out. We have to start defending the right of law in this country.
Sure.
Mm. We literally have to. It might not make us feel good inside, but we literally have to do the law-abiding thing. Mm. Then we can have a session where we say, we know the law, we understand it, we've applied it in this way, but we feel that these people should be in this particular way. Mm. It doesn't make sense for us to still be fielding a lot of people from Zimbabwe, and this is important,
and
who are suing us as a South African government. And we're saying, but Makenga, this thing, like,
how did we get here?
Like, we must take this heat. And unfortunately, everyone always polarizes this issue. It's not a polarizing issue. What's the law?
Mm.
That's not my opinion.
Yeah. But with this, the Helen Suzmans and the NGOs
will make
don't
it complicated.
Want.
They don't want.
Yeah.
Because there's a grouping of people in this country who benefit from having low-cost labor. Just look at the George incident.
Of course.
At the George tragedy.
Well, even just the example you made about, like, if you go through the permits and you decide who's going to be here, who's not going to be here.
Yeah. Sure.
Who the fuck's going to deliver the Uber Eats, bro?
But, I've started
seeing a lot more South Africans, by the way.
Hold on, on that point, I think then we can obviously lean into, are South Africans really employable?
You sure you want to jump on that point?
Can we actually have that?
Are South Africans employable?
So,
do we have the skill set?
I want to have this discussion on a...
On merit.
Not even on merit. I want us to say on a sectoral basis.
Then no.
A sectoral basis. Because not each industry has the same requirements.
Sure.
Right? Or entry level requirements for it. So the first thing we have to have a discussion about is the willingness or the lack of willingness of the hospitality sector in this country to employ South Africans.
Sure.
Right? And restaurateurs.
Is it a lack of willingness or is it like
it's facing reality? It's cheaper.
If it were more expensive, is it sustainable? In other words, a waiter currently who agrees to, I'll only work for tips, okay? Yeah. Here comes the South African says, "Ngifuna basic ya 6,000 and then ama tips wami." What you understand? Is it sustainable for your cost?
I think let's put a carrot in a stick. Let's have both so that a business knows how to move.
Sure.
So in other words, you employ more South Africans, right? Mm-hmm. You employ more South Africans, you get tax rebates. So we're not going to take anything from you, nor do you have to pay us more as the operating business.
Boom.
That's a start.
Sure.
But if we believe that this is the acceptable threshold and you can prove that you were not able to, after numerous times of trying to get South Africans to come and do this work,
not able to meet that exchange.
100%, you're able to then do that.
I then want to add to that. Mm. Okay, let's leave the stats and whatever.
Yeah.
South Africans are deemed lazy.
By who?
By South Africans.
But by Uber Eats. But,
no, hold on. Let's just, no.
No, no. But this is where, again, I always go... There's a feeling that exists in South Africans that is inherently negative.
Sure.
I'm not saying that South Africans are the most hardworking people we've ever seen in our lives, because there is, and this is scientifically proven, that there is a feeling of things will be fine in a country that you are in if you are born and raised in that country.
Sure.
There's just a feeling of like, oh no, government will look after me.
Yeah.
There is that thing, right?
Sure.
And it exists. And unfortunately in South Africa, because we're more and more becoming a welfare state, it's something that's now becoming inherently ingrained in a lot of people.
Sure.
Old people, people our age, people who are starting to get 45. It's like he's waiting for something from the government.
Sure.
So that's one aspect of it. So we need to have that discussion to say, okay, in this sector, is it able to take in South Africans? Remember, inherently, right, guys from other countries, because of how those countries are structured, things like motorbikes are a strong form of transportation. So as South Africans, a motorbike is seen as a toy, as a weekend thing, as a whatnot, etc. So
I had a motorbike in Cape Town and they were like, oh, why do you have a motorbike?
So it is a thing that it's not part of our nature.
When he pulled up at his friends' houses, they were like, oh, I thought you'd bring it in. How's it
ding, ding. So that is a conversation that we need to have, right?
Sure.
So Do we need to upskill people? Yes, I believe we need. Surely. We need to. So that's the one. Because if you have, if you say to, does a South African want a job to drive? They'll probably tell you, yeah. Like, do you want me to drive? Like, do you want me to deliver stuff and just drive? Yeah.
Sure.
Like, they will. But a motorbike presents a reality that they haven't been exposed to when they were even young. Whereas you go
it's
to
like another
country,
level to enter
100%. You go to another country, and that's easy to do, and that has to play into the psyche.
Sure.
The second thing, right, is we've got to then look at the psyche of people and say to ourselves: are we now shortcutists? Are we always looking for a shortcut to a particular place, right? And the data would suggest that we literally are those type of people, because there are certain jobs that we're not willing to do, but that could be because we come from a country that allows us to do that through the welfare system that we have in place.
But that's a problem. Which are the jobs that we're not prepared to do? Sorry.
Before you get into that, but that's a problem where people are selective of, in a country where it's limited in terms of employment, you're selective of what you...
No, that's freedom, sir. Yeah. You can't say, I'm your sebenza, because you don't have a choice. You can't do
what,
that.
With what income?
No, I'm saying like in terms of, you can't force the job on them.
Someone is presenting an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
You're like, don't feel like doing, you know,
I don't feel like doing work. It. I'm going to sit at home. It's a bit of a fuck up. But if you say, I don't feel like doing it, I'd rather do something
else. And I don't
want
to seem privileged in what I'm saying, but I'm just saying
gainful employment is always the term that I like to say. Like, there is gain in me being employed in this way.
Sure.
But also employment in South Africa is not monolithic. It's not one thing, right? It's got to be looked at on a province by province basis and a district by district. And what do I mean by that? The minimum wage or the minimum or slash and also living wages that we apply uniformly around South Africa don't make sense.
In Joburg, it's not the same.
It's not the same as like Eastern Cape or in Mangaung, etc. And we need to have that chat to say, okay, how much does it cost to live in this area relative? Because when you go to the ground and you ask people, bro, if I score you X amount of thousands, it's below this thing. Would you work for this thing? They're like, yeah, I would do this. But the government would then say, you're not allowed to do that. Now, they are doing that because there are places in this country where mass exploitation of workers is a thing. But if you're trying to bring in maybe 20, 30 people, right, on a farm to work, right, or in a delivery setting, you've got a little warehouse somewhere, somehow, and people want to work, you can say, hey, I can only hire five. That's what government is saying. They're not saying, if you have those people and you can't match their salary, show us, we will assist you to do it, to get to that minimum wage. Those are some of the conversations that we're not necessarily having properly.
Are they not then, just on that example, are they not saying instead, where you as the employer, are you not saying, government saying you can only hire five, but I'm like, but there's 20 Owens.
Yeah.
And between the 20... But writing a budget, a corner.
Yes.
So in other words...
So Gov says no. Says
Gov says no, you can't do that. So even though I can be more efficient to 20 guys, I can't.
It's a whole thing of like the law. So they love to apply that law, but they don't want to apply other laws.
Sure. I was literally about to say that.
Yeah. So that's where we are as a country. And unfortunately, we're going to need some assholes, right? We're going to need some assholes for at least the next 10 years who can have this conversation and say, no, fuck off. Like, this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah, this is it.
And that's why we end up...
Assholes on the employer side.
No, on government the Gov side.
Government side.
Gov's got to apply... Gov's got to apply the laws. And it mustn't be nice for people.
Sure.
But it must be the right thing. But don't apply in one sector what affects another sector and say, ish, no. So it's a perfect example. You're saying, the whole like illegal immigrants thing, hey guys, but this side you're like, hey, you must pay people this much. So these two things are actually correlated.
Sure.
Because these guys will come in and they want to work for less. But you're saying here, no, you can't pay people less.
Okay.
And these ones, the math is not mathing.
Okay. And we need people that are going to be assholes for a while. It's not going to be nice for us as people. Sometimes it will go against me.
Sure.
But if they can clearly tell us why they're doing this, then I can be like, I fell on the wrong side of that thing, but at least the law is being applied. So let me rather fight to change the law as a normal South African.
On the question that PH raised just earlier, like on the, I don't know if it would be entitlement or whatever, where it's like, You currently don't have a job.
Yeah.
But you also don't want to do the jobs that are available.
Yeah.
Where do we go with that now? Because, yabo, like I'm saying, as much as you can't force people, somebody has to do those jobs. And when uhleli awunanex.
Yeah.
But yabo le angengiyenze.
So oh, that it is a tough issue. I think and I'm like I'm freewheeling here. Mm. I think we need to as a country have this discussion in a more broader sense, but I want to include something. I want us to have a conversation around internal migration in South Africa and just general urbanization.
Mm.
So we're moving, people are moving from rural areas to urban areas.
It comes to job.
So I want to say, government is able, to designate certain areas as indigent, areas that are really struggling.
Mm.
And they even will tell you, the rates here are cheaper, right? But they don't want to do that same demarcation for things like salaries.
Mm.
Right, but they'd rather give people 350. But if you came and said, I want to pay them 2.5 a month, the government say no, but that's below minimum wage.
Sure.
So I can't start a business that will likely grow to a point where it can pay the people gainful employment.
Yeah.
But remember, the people in that area, because it's maybe not even peri-urban, it's considered to be rural, pay already less for anything that they get, electricity, whatever. But the government knows this, but they don't want it to be around money because they're saying, no, what this will do is that it'll incentivize other people to pay people less. No, it won't. Because if you're running a business, Ekomani, or outside Ekomani, and you've got those 20 people and you can pay them 2,500 rand, but you declare that to government, right? You don't just...
You're not hiding it.
Yes, sure. Gov, I'm employing 20 people below the minimum wage.
Sure.
And these people come from this community, etc.
They walk to work.
Yes. So do that analysis, right, of how they live and what they do with this money.
Sure.
And submit it to government and get them to also put their signatures on and their IDs. Mm. That is a government that actually says to me, we actually want people employed, bro.
Mm.
Okay.
That says, we know that Uzimas is running a company that does aquaponic farming outside a coal mine, and he does millies and he does this and does canned food. He's actually employing people, more people, but he is under the minimum wage. We are aware of it.
Mm.
But the minute his revenue increases past a certain point, there's an expectation that Zimasa must increase and match the minimum wage.
Yes.
Now suddenly, people are going to be employed.
Mm. Okay.
Maybe they don't have a good understanding. They definitely don't have a good understanding of
the dynamics of small business.
Yes, they don't.
Yeah.
I think that's a given.
Yeah,
I think this conversation needs
strong.
Needs around two.
Yeah,
time is not enough.
Sorry, what I said about Uber Eats drivers. I love
them.
Bro, firstly, I want to thank you for changing the narrative of Xhosa Gents. Thank you.
I don't know what's going on now. If you look at what's happening here. This is what happens.
No.
Xhosa Gents, me, I see him.
Xhosa Gents have bad PR. Come on. Xhosa Gents have bad PR. That's your problem.
You'll have that little moment. Yabo, le, yenzakale ntaba. And then.
No, I'm talking about here, dog.
Hey, well,
come on, man.
Also, there's another chat that I don't want to have now because time is finished. But there was a mass exodus of Xhosa people from the public sector in 2009. And go look at most boards of companies and see where the closer people ended up. Yeah. But anyways, that's another discussion.
Yeah.
That's another discussion.
Yeah. That is such shout a out. Clip. Please he, come back.
He'll
sir.
Be back. Definitely. He'll
on the
be
next
back.
Episode. Where are the closer gents?
But Joe, man, thank you very much.
Cheers,
this
man.
Is
Cheers,
very
guys.
Informative.
Yeah.
I, for most part, like I was literally like just consuming all the information. It's very, it's
yeah,
very.
You too, guys, my man. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Today I was a fan. I was like, wow.
Okay. And if, in case you didn't know, Bashanga, my handles.
Oh, yeah. So across all social media platforms, I don't think there's any that I'm not on,
sure.
Probably just Snapchat. It's Mustafa. So it's MOOSHTAFFA, Mustafa. And then just to add on to that, on YouTube, search for Zimasa Mustafa Vabaza.
Yeah, man.
You'll find
everything that is interesting about this country, what we are capable of, a lot of positivity, a lot of, just positivity in general. Numbers.
Yeah,
numbers. I can prove it. A lot of quick education so you can sound cool at price.
At your price.
Also, 30 seconds, you're going to be nice. You're going to be nice.
So shout out.
Do you know where all the closer gents ended up who left the public sector?
Well,
I do.
And this information was powered by Xhosa Gents, so thank you very much. Have yourself an amazing week.
The real Xhosa Network.
The real Xhosa Network. Shout out. Zim, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you for having us. I mean, thank you for being here. Of course, it is, what's the name of the show? The Shady Podcast. Mm-hmm. I'll keep forgetting.
Tell them the handles. Yeah.
No,
follow
man.
Us on the socials.
Yeah, man, follow us on the socials. It's a Shady Network. Come on, dog. How are you going to get the numbers? And speaking of numbers, we're giving away money.
We're giving away money. Yeah. There's 10 grand up for grabs. Take a photo with the billboards. Also, what we're doing is, we want like 47,000 subscribers.
Oh, that's nice.
We want 50,000.
Yeah, 50,000. Yeah.
So when we get 50,000,
something's going to happen.
We give 50,000.
Sure.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Then definitely what we're going to do is we're going to get to 100 and give 100.
Don't know about that, but...
then what you're going to do... then you're going to get to... Well, I'm not in season.